website tomorrow. Appellants will have 5 minutes for their initial argument, or not 5 minutes, 15 minutes. I misspoke there. I scared you, sorry. 15 minutes for your initial argument, 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent will have 15 minutes for your argument. We would appreciate it if you could introduce yourselves and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument, and please pronounce your name and your client's name for us. That will help us. And the podium is adjustable if need be, and there's also a clock on the podium showing the amount of time you have remaining in your argument. So, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joseph Dicker. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants, Platinum Edge Properties, LLC, and Wells Property Solutions, LLC. The matter's been briefed, and modesty on my part and compliments to my colleagues, I think the matter's been well briefed. I hope the court has a good sense of the facts. My goal today is to address 4 points. Those are the status of the sheriff's certificate at issue here. We will argue that the court's factual finding below that there was no error in the certificate was simply wrong. I will argue today that the court misunderstood and misapplied equitable principles and failed to exercise equitable jurisdiction properly, on our view. I will argue that the harm from which the relief is sought occurred not at the redemption, but with the filing of an erroneous document, so that the harm was fixed long before the redemption occurred. And finally, Your Honor, I'll address the question of whether the status of the redemption, the trial court, held that the redemption was a legal remedy, and we believe that's just a misconception of what was going on and what the status of a redemption is and what legal remedies are. And of course, I want to address any questions that the court and the members of the court may have today. Pardon me, Your Honors.
So before you start out, I just want to clarify, as I understand it, your appeal is only of the decision in the quiet title action, not in the eviction action.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, there's a patent, obvious, and plain error in the document. It's in some ways shocking to me that the court found otherwise. To describe the error as an inartfully or unartfully drawn document just flies in the face of it. There is a typographical error. That is a plain fact.
So if we were to accept what you're saying is true, what difference does it make? I mean, your clients were told twice, and I think that's undisputed, that $4,600 wasn't the right amount, and common sense probably knew that. But setting that aside, because that's not an issue here, what difference does it make? Let's assume the district court was wrong. How do your clients win?
Your Honor, it makes a huge difference, and that actually speaks to the point at which the harm occurred. Because my clients made significant business and financial decisions based on the erroneous document before they were told it was erroneous.
Before they even saw the certificate, correct?
No, Your Honor. They saw the certificate, knew there was a foreclosure.
There was a sheriff's sale already, right? I mean, what? And they didn't have any legal right. I mean, so just correct me, because I think I've outlined the dates. Mm-hmm. But wasn't the quick claim deed executed after the sheriff's sale, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're absolutely correct, Your Honor, and that is precisely the point. My client, Wells Property, knowing that the property had been foreclosed and believing in good faith, relying on a recorded document, believed that the redemption price was approximately $4,600.
So the sheriff's certificate was recorded prior to them getting the quitclaim deed?
That's my understanding of the facts, Your Honor.
Okay, so they knew there was a sheriff's sale. Okay, all right. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that really is the heart of our argument, because
You would agree, though, that the statute says to redeem, you have to pay the sum of money for which the property was sold. It doesn't say the amount indicated on the sheriff's certificate. It says the sum of money for which the property was sold.
Absolutely, Your Honor, that is a statute, but the sheriff's certificate is prima facie evidence of the sale and the terms, the date, the time, and the amount sold.
Wasn't that rebutted? Go ahead.
But there isn't any case law that says you look to the sheriff's certificate to determine the amount sold.
I'm not aware of any case that says that, Your Honor, but that...
Okay.
With respect, that is the obvious reason why the certificate has to be recorded, has to be recorded timely.
I'm not sure about that. When you look at the statute, the sheriff's certificate serves the purpose of giving title to the entity that bought it down the road.
But it also...
If there isn't a redemption. But I guess I want to go back to your primary argument about the district court erred in, let me look at your brief here. You say the district court made two fundamental factual errors. And I just want to make sure I understand your argument. So, and the first one relates to the sheriff's certificate. This case comes to us after a decision on summary judgment. And at the summary judgment phase, a district court doesn't make factual determinations. It views the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party and then determines whether there's any material issues of fact that would preclude granting summary judgment. I think you agree with that.
That is a general proposition under the standards of summary judgment, yes.
So when you argue that the district court made fundamental factual errors, I'm a little confused as to what you're arguing. Are you arguing that the district court erred as a matter of law in terms of how it viewed when it can... I'm confused by the language fundamental factual errors, given that we're here on summary judgment. So help me understand what you're arguing.
The court below exercised, I think appropriately, the legal interpretation of a document. That is for the court.
So the document speaks for itself?
Yes, Your Honor. That and the court, we think this matter should have been resolved on summary judgment just the other way.
So you agree, as you state in your brief, that there's no disputed issues of material fact?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And did then, still do.
Okay.
So the document is what it is, and we believe the court made a fundamental error in reading that document to be merely inartfully drawn as opposed to being erroneous, and that it did not accurately reflect the sale price at the sheriff's foreclosure sale. And we believe, while that is a factual issue, it is the kind that the court may view as legal because it is construing a document.
The document shows that, as you note, a magnified view of the document shows the correct price, $44,600. That was the amount that the property sold for.
Yes, and we don't disagree, but to rely on a magnified version of the text doesn't really answer the question. The question is, would a juror, a reasonable person looking at that document, conclude that the purchase price was $4,600 as opposed to $44,600. The court found that no reasonable person could find that it was $4,600 based on the court's finding that it was inartfully drawn based on the two-time magnification.
Well, and the court was also relying on the statements from the sheriff's office.
Which again supports the notion that there was a typographical error. We don't dispute that the price that was actually bid was $600-some-odd.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we...
And then turning to, I mean, you're basically making an equitable argument here, as I understand it.
Completely, Your Honor. We think that the court misconstrued its jurisdiction in this case, that this was, an equitable action to begin with, and so the court should have approached it from the perspective of equity, looking at the totality of the circumstances, and looking, therefore, at the actions of all of the parties. Which brings us back to the point, we think that when the court made the mistake in finding that there was no error in the document, that cascaded down the line because the court then did not reach the other equitable issues that we think should have been addressed.
Did conclude that you had an adequate legal remedy in the form of redemption. So help us understand why that wasn't an adequate legal remedy when, you know, the legislature has prescribed that to redeem a property, you have to pay the amount that was sold, the amount that the property sold for. Here, your client could have paid that amount and received title to the property and then had, you know, the benefit of any investments they made with the loan money that they received.
If I may, Your Honor, I think there are three points in response to that. First, because a quiet title action is by its nature equitable, I don't think you reach the question of whether equity applies because there is or is not an adequate remedy at law.
Point me to a case that says that, because the case law says that you don't have an equitable remedy if there is an adequate legal remedy. And I don't think that means even if there's an alternative equitable argument, you can always pursue that even if you have an adequate legal remedy. I didn't see any case that you cited that stands for the proposition that you can just ignore the legal remedy.
It's not a question of whether you ignore it. The question is, what is the nature of the action? So when one seeks injunctive relief that is inherently equitable, there might be other legal remedies, but that doesn't change the nature of the relief sought.
In your complaint, you were... Well, anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So my first point in response to your question is, one, the nature of the action was equitable. Quiet title actions are equitable in nature, so I don't think you get to the question of whether there was an adequate remedy at law. Second point in response, Your Honor, is that the redemption, particularly in this context, was not a remedy. That was my client's right. It was a statutory right to redeem the property. When the question of whether the redemption was itself efficacious, whether it was a proper redemption, that's the question, that's the issue about which the remedy has to be applied. So I would draw a distinction between the right to redeem versus the remedy for either an improper or a denied redemption. You know, our argument is that the sheriff was wrongful in not issuing the certificate, and we need a remedy to that.
Well, I guess I'm still struggling with your first point, because generally you can't bring an unjust enrichment claim if you have a contract law claim. And so how is this any different? Why should you be able to bring the equitable claims that you're bringing here when you have a legal right to redeem the property and get title to the property in that manner?
Well, I think the Swagger case helps move us. I know it's an old case, but that suggests that even when there is a statutory right, that doesn't change, the statute doesn't change the underlying nature of the relief being sought. Here, I think there was an equitable action. The nature of the jurisdiction here was equity because it was a quiet title action. Beyond that, the court, I think, misapplied the notion of an adequate remedy. The redemption is not the remedy. That's why we're here, is because there is a dispute over the redemption. So the remedy is itself equitable. It's declaratory to determine whether or not the exercise of the redemption was effective.
Well, you would agree that your clients didn't pay the amount required under the redemption statute.
No, I don't concede that, Your Honor. We believe that the sheriff's certificate was prima facie proof of the amount that was paid at the sale, and that was the amount that they were required to pay at law, based on the sheriff's certificate. I do agree, as a matter of fact, that's not the number that was bid at the sale. But our position is that my client clients as a successor to the owner, as an owner, as a redeeming creditor, had a right to rely on the sheriff's certificate, and that they had a duty to make sure that the sheriff's certificate was proper and recorded properly, and they had every ability to correct the error, which, again, I think is plain. And when you look at that document, not under
So can I ask a question, though? Your causes of action were all in equity. And I'm getting back to the point I initially made. Your clients had actual notice, not once, but twice, before the deadline for the redemption period of the actual amount. So why does unclean hands not buy your claim, setting aside all the rest of your arguments?
I'm sorry, it goes back to the point that my clients had a vested interest in the property. They invested in the property in reliance on the original document.
But doesn't matter, because they knew what was required to get title. And so setting aside, let's assume you're right on everything else, on the reading of the document and, you know, on the redemption, the statutory right not being an adequate legal remedy. Your client had unclean hands. They did not have a right to rely on that certificate when they had actual notice otherwise. So how do you respond to that?
Your Honor, my time is up. May I respond?
You may.
Thank you. Again, it goes back to my argument about the point at which the harm accrued. Because my clients relied on, the record is undisputed on this.
No, but they knew before.
Sorry, Your Honor. I don't mean to be
before
contentious.
Before their offer, well, at any rate, we're arguing and you're over time and you still have 5 minutes for rebuttal, so I'll let you finish.
My only point, Your Honor, is that when they bought the property, that is Wells, and Wells borrowed money from Platinum Edge, to fund the acquisition and renovation of the property. So when they bought the property, when they renovated and spent $25,000 to improve the property, between the point where the sheriff's certificate was recorded and before the redemption, that's when they were vested and their rights vested, and that's long before they were told that the redemption price was not correct. The redemption price stated in the certificate was not correct.
So just so I'm clear, so that all happened before the sheriff's certificate was recorded?
No, let me be clear, Your Honor. Sheriff's certificate is recorded.
Okay, all right.
It says $4,600. My client buys the property from the owner, borrows $25,000 from Platinum Edge, does some renovations on the property. The redemption period is shortened, which I think had already happened by the time my client takes title. And then in an appropriate time frame before the end of the redemption period, they request the redemption price and they dispute it. But now we're talking about days and hours of time to address the issue, and they disputed it. They said, no, we relied on the amount in the sheriff's certificate. We bought the property. We've invested in the property. That's the number. And they did their own calculation based on the certificate and then tendered that payment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Kevin Doby. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Federal National Mortgage Association, also known as Fannie Mae. The court should affirm the district court's decision after a de novo review and affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment to respondent. The district court correctly determined that reasonable persons could not draw different conclusions regarding the amount listed in the sheriff's certificate of sale. The court explained that Platinum did not perfect its redemption because it failed to pay the appropriate redemption price, and a jury could not reasonably conclude otherwise. The court also explained that the purchase price on the document is indisputably $44,600, not $4,600.
Finally, well, you would agree, though, when you look at the document, not magnified to 200 times its normal size, that it, you know, it looks like there's something over the dollar amount, and then there's 4600. So it's not entirely clear without magnification that it's 44,600. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, I think the court made the correct decision, and I agree with the district court that it's indisputably 44,600.
Should that have been a jury issue?
I think the,
I mean,
the way
it can be, you know, we can all look at it, but it's not like, you know, language in a contract that a...
I think the district court explained, and that it was correct, that the reasonable jurors couldn't find otherwise.
Isn't really the key point, though, that the statute provides that to redeem, you have to pay the amount that the land was sold for plus additional costs, and that wasn't tendered here?
I think that is the best argument, Your Honor.
So then that gets us to their equitable argument. You know, they didn't satisfy the requirements for redemption under the statutory framework. So what is your response to appellant's argument that the circumstances of this case warrant equitable relief, or at least a trial, where they allege that they relied on the sheriff's certificate, and that when they read it, they thought it said 4,600, not 44,600?
Your Honor, the respondent argued below and argues again here that the statutory right of redemption is a legal right with a legal remedy, that there's an adequate legal remedy, and therefore any equitable consideration is prohibited or barred. The court, district court, cited the Service Master case. That's the same decision that we cited. There's a number of cases that respondent cited that explained that a post-sale redemption is a statutory legal right. It's wholly a creature of statute. I think what the investors aren't saying, and I'm not exactly sure why, but they're saying it's not adequate because they didn't want to pay $44,600. I think that what they're saying is that they couldn't make financial sense of the transaction if they had to pay $44,600, and that's really why we're here. And then I would also note, Your Honor, that the court should affirm because the investors have unclean hands. They knew the amount prior to the expiration of the redemption period.
But did they know the amount when they provided the mortgage? In other words, they're saying the unclean hands argument isn't persuasive because they didn't, at the time they made the mortgage, they didn't have information from the sheriff's office that the amount was $44,600. They were relying solely on their certificate.
I think my response is that the claim that they're making arises when they fail to redeem, and when they came to court here, their verified complaint states that they didn't know about the amount that was required to redeem at the time of the deadline to redeem expired, and that's not true. And
what date was the sheriff's certificate recorded?
March 10th, 2021.
So it was on March 10th. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thanks.
Can you address their argument that the Swager case suggests that the general rule that if you have an adequate legal remedy, you can't pursue equitable relief, that somehow the Swager case suggests that that doesn't apply here?
Your Honor, in the appellant's brief, I think the argument was that equity functions this is on page 17 of appellant's brief, that equity functions as a supplement to the rest of the law when legal remedies are inadequate to achieve complete justice, and then the appellant cites Swager. and go on to say that here the court should have and did not focus on what achieving complete justice would take in this case. I don't see how that respondent, I think, would have to respond and say that there's no, that doesn't take us outside of the service master decision, that the part that they're saying is inadequate is that they didn't want to redeem for that price, and that doesn't, that's not an exception in the service master case. The last thing that I just wanted to note for the court and the district court didn't address is standing, and it's maybe academic here, but it's interesting because Wells is an appellant and a plaintiff in their complaint, and yet Wells didn't take any action to redeem or to try and recover anything in this case. Wells knew about the redemption price prior to the expiration of the redemption period, but they did nothing, and so I don't think that they have any claim. Platinum did try to redeem through the sheriff, but didn't attempt to redeem directly through Federal National Mortgage Association, and by failing to make any tender under the Schrader versus Lehman case, I think that they lost their claim. They didn't preserve and protect their right to redeem. There's no harm from Fannie Mae to Platinum because they didn't try to redeem from Fannie Mae. And unless your honors have any other questions, I think I'll concede the rest of my time.
I do. So if they invested money in the property and improved the property, in reliance on the sheriff's certificate, which we have to all, I mean, it's not clear what that number is. I mean, the court interpreted it, we could come to a different conclusion, I suppose, since it's being brought to us as a legal issue and a contract interpretation issue, if you will. Then why shouldn't their claim for unjust enrichment at least be able to proceed? Because there was an inartful, at a minimum, typing of the number on the sheriff's certificate. They didn't know that at the time, the rest of this. They thought they could redeem for $4,600. And we're at a summary judgment phase. I mean, a jury might ultimately just believe that that was reasonable or whatever, but we're not at that point.
Your Honor, so I believe that the service master, the bar to equitable relief, would prohibit an unjust enrichment claim. That's an equitable claim. But
what if we said no? I mean, that they didn't redeem, so they don't have a right to redeem. So let's throw that out the window now. But Fannie Mae is getting a property that arguably improved. I don't know what the actual value, you know, what the fair, if it improved the fair market value or what. But shouldn't that claim survive independent of, you know, throw out the redemption? They don't ever, let's assume, you know, we agree with the district court. They didn't redeem in time, too bad. But they did put some money into the property.
This is like an investor or a speculator attempting to redeem or acquiring a foreclosure. And this is happening a lot right now. The investors are looking for foreclosures. They try and buy a former owner's redemption rights during the redemption period. Then either they redeem as an owner during that six-month redemption period, or they...
But there's nothing unlawful about that. I mean, so why shouldn't they be able to... Yeah.
I think I'm getting to sort of a caveat emptor principle. It's like, you know that this is an inherently risky business. Part of their verified complaint says that they looked at Zillow, a website, for what the property price was, $4,600. I think that they took the risk, and that they knew, even when they were spending that money, that the only way we can save this property is to redeem. So if they were investing money into the property, they knew that in 3 months or 2 months or 1 month, whenever the redemption period was about to expire, this is the way we have to protect ourselves, is by redeeming. So I think, I don't see how we can throw out the statutory legal remedy.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, briefly. I just want to, not so much rebuttal, but just to clarify a couple of points. One, I want to be clear about my use of Swagger. I don't believe, and I hope I did not mislead the court by suggesting that Swagger expressly holds that equity applies when there might be other remedies at law. What I believe Swagger holds is that quiet title actions are equitable in nature, and so when you are dealing with that, you are dealing with equity regardless of whether there's that. But the regardless is my gloss. Those words are not in the case. So I want to be very clear with the court. I may be pushing Swagger, I think, very fairly. I think that's very consistent with traditional notions, like very historic notions of equity, where depending on what kind of relief you were seeking determined which courthouse you went into, whether it's the Chancery Court or the Law Court. But my proposition is that Swagger holds that this type of action is equitable and principles of equity apply.
Can you point us to any case where, similar case to this, where there's been equitable relief based on an alleged redemption at a price less than the actual sale price?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor. I think in that regard, these facts are unique.
Okay.
In particular. Thank you. I'm glad my learned friend, and I do use that seriously. I've worked with Mr. Dobie many times over the years and have tremendous respect for him, but I'm glad he used the phrase caveat emptor, because to me that's exactly why we have a recording system and why the certificates have to be accurate and recorded, because that's part of what the buyer is relying on. That's what they're relying on as their due diligence. So if I'm going to be subject to the idea of caveat emptor, I should be able to rely on the information that you promulgate. I just want to
And I apologize for not having dug into the record in this degree. Did your client look at the actual share certificate prior to, is there anything in the record on that?
Your Honor, I believe they did, and I believe there's affidavit testimony to that effect.
I'll look at that. Thanks.
They also looked at Zillow, as my learned friend suggests. But I don't want to go off, especially with 2 minutes, I don't want to go off on a divergence. But the question of whether that was a reasonable price is really not material here. There actually are many foreclosures that seem to be too low because the mortgages have been paid down or there are association liens, none of which would necessarily be obvious to the party. So I did want to just clarify our position with regarding equity. And
your position depends on your view that the certificate says $4,600, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
And to be frank, our position depends entirely on that. If the court is right that it was not an error and that no reasonable person could read it as $4,600, we lose. Our position is that that's not the case, that there was an obvious typographical error, and that a normal person looking at it in normal context at a normal distance would read that as $4,600. We're really making two different equitable arguments, Your Honor, and I just want to be clear about that. We argue as a matter of equity, our redemption was effective and should have been allowed, and we are therefore the proper owner of the property. And that's arguing based on the totality of the circumstances and that the court has equitable jurisdiction. But Chief Judge Siegel's questions actually allude to our second argument regarding equity, that where the law has failed here, failed my clients, has failed to provide a remedy, they still should be entitled to recover under equitable principles of quantum merit and unjust enrichment. Wells invested, I think the number is on the order of $25,000, to repair the property. It did so in reliance. And that is its only claim for standing, by the way. I agree with counsel. Wells has no claim to the redemption. And I apologize if we haven't been clear, but the claim for redemption is solely Platinum Edge's. The question of unjust enrichment and quantum merit, I think, belongs to both of them, and that's why we've asserted Wells' rights in this action as well. Thank you,
Your Honors. And remind me, before the district court, did you argue that you were entitled to summary judgment on those claims based on equity? And did you outline the elements of each and the evidence that supported that?
We did, Your Honor, with the caveat that we did not argue for the amount of that, the benefit. But we argued I believe we argued specifically that we were entitled to that as an alternative to title itself.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.
Thank you, Your Honor.